Each week here at Mater Dei Radio, we highlight one of our amazing local parishes. And our parish of the week is Our Lady of Lavang and St. Andrew Dunlac Mission. Joining me this morning is our friend Father Randy Huang, and he is here to tell us about this community that he grew up in. Thank you for being here, Father.
Sure, thank you for always having me.
Well, it's always fun when you join the Morning Blend, and I'm really excited today to talk about Our Lady of Lavang and St. Andrew Dunlac. So maybe you can just start us off by just telling us about this parish and give us an overview of what it's like.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know if most of our viewers are, you know, where we're present at the Corpus Christi Mass, but I think the beauty of our archdiocese is just the diversity of the people that come together. And a large number of the people from our archdiocese are from the Vietnamese community. And as you said, you know, from these two parishes, from Our Lady of Lavang and the mission of St. Andrew and Black in Beaufort, Oregon. And so the history behind Our Lady of Lavang was that the refugees from Vietnam immigrated to the U.S., most often called as the boat people, right, in 1975, fleeing Vietnam. And so the parish was established from that very small community that actually started out worshiping in an apartment. And I'm sure people know, but when they arrived to the U.S., right, there wasn't a place for them at that point to be able to offer Mass in Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. And so they started out a very small community and had Mass in an apartment. And over time grew and was able to have resources to be able to, build a church. And so Our Lady of Lavang was established really in its community in 1975. And then a couple of years later, they were able to purchase a property off of Sandy and 52nd, right across from St. Rose of Lima.
Okay.
And from there, they purchased that property and renovated it. And it became, at that point, what we know as the Southeast Asian Vicariate, and then coined Our Lady of Lavang, being the patroness of that parish. And over time, that parish grew and grew and grew. And in 2019, the parish actually moved to its current location, which is off of Johnson Creek and 205.
Right.
Right. The mega church right across the Clackamas Town Center. And so that property was purchased and is now currently the Our Lady of Lavang Parish. But it's very beautiful to kind of see the growth, right, of that community coming from a very small, humble beginnings in an apartment complex.
Wow.
And then now occupying the largest Catholic church in the Archdiocese of Portland. I think there would be no argument to say that Our Lady of Lavang Parish is the largest parish, both in terms of size of the facilities, but also of the population of people there in all of the archdiocese.
That's incredible. And like you said, just an amazing to see the growth over time and that so many people call that parish home. And you mentioned the Corpus Christi procession. I was pretty close to a lot of people from Our Lady of Lavang, and they were singing in Vietnamese during the procession. And I was really touched by that. I just thought that was so beautiful.
Yeah.
And yeah, like you said, that just that beautiful diversity that we have here in our local church.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's beautiful to see, you know, the faith of the people, especially once they've experienced great difficulty.
Right?
And we find this a lot amongst our brothers and sisters who have come to the U.S. or other countries, especially the ones that are fleeing from difficult situations. But I think that's really also the bedrock of the vibrancy of Our Lady of Lavang, is that a lot of these people lived through some very difficult times. And it brought them to this realization that there has to be a God. And in gratitude to that, that's how it's really kind of spurred up and then this desire to really grow and to really give back to the community. You know, I think a point that most people don't know, but the renovation of Our Lady of Lavang, where it's currently now in Happy Valley, was all done by parishioners.
Wow.
I mean, you know, we speak about work of human hands, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the entire parish itself was put together, renovated by the hands of each parishioner.
So they actually went in and did the physical work?
Yeah. I mean, this was during COVID.
Oh, wow.
And the pastor had told me at that time when they were, you know, right before COVID was when they had solidified the property and was going to start renovating and moving in and whatnot. But, I mean, I remember him giving me this outrageous number of, you know, what architects and whatnot were giving to him. You know, because they hired architects, they hired all these engineers to come in and to, you know, give them an estimate and to kind of give them, you know, options in terms of renovating the sanctuary space into a Catholic church, right? Because what it originally was a Protestant megachurch.
Okay.
Right? Actually, the interesting thing is it's the same Protestant pastor of the Christ Cathedral in Orange County.
Right? Okay.
The same pastor who built Christ Cathedral, what used to be, you know, the Protestant megachurch.
Oh, wow.
Came to Oregon and established this, what was they called, New Hope. Another kind of tie there. But obviously, a megachurch is very different from a Catholic church, right? In terms of its layout, in terms of its worship space and whatnot. And so there's a lot of renovations that had to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, architects and engineers and people came and kind of gave options to the pastor. And I remember him telling me that the numbers were just outrageous. They were looking, you know, 40, 50 million plus.
Oh, my goodness.
To run up at the space, and it'd be like a three-phase plan.
Mm-hmm.
They would do certain things, but it would cost roughly that amount.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where the pastor was like, well, I don't think we can afford that, right? But providentially, I would say, it was during COVID that really kind of transpired. And the pastor just kind of was reminiscing with me at that time of how many of his parishioners came to him and said, hey, Father, how about you give it to us? We can do it.
Wow.
Right? In the parish, there are engineers, there are architects, there are designers, there are carpenters, there are, you know, masons. And so they all gave their labor to the parish.
Wow.
Not a single dime. You hear about these stories of, in the past, how Notre Dame and St. Peter's were built by these families and by these, you know, communities, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we don't often hear that in the U.S. these days. You know, most oftentimes parishes hire contractors to do everything. But Our Lady Louvain, physically, the building itself, you know, was renovated tile by tile, slab by slab, right, pew by pew, all by parishioners. Nothing there was really contracted. It was all contributions of parishioners. And to see, you know, how they were able to do that in a year's time, and where it's at now, is quite impressive.
Wow.
And even that, too, there are no staff at Our Lady Louvain.
Okay.
And so it's only the pastor and the associate, and they have a secretary who's a sister who helps there. Otherwise, every single component of that parish is volunteer.
Wow.
So the grounds work, window cleaning, you know, teaching, maintenance, everything is volunteer work. And I mean, like, if you ever get a chance to go, it's quite impressive. I mean, they have a team of people that cycle through, that clean the windows there
every week.
And they're all volunteers. They come home after work and they just go and do it. But I think the reason why I bring all this up is that I think for a lot of us in the U.S., we've lost that culture, right, of seeing the parish as home, right? We kind of see it as, well, that's kind of where I go to Mass.
Right.
That's where I go to Bible study. That's where I go to do this and receive this. But when it comes down to it, you know, that's not really my investment.
Right.
It's not a place where I really give myself.
Mm.
Whereas the people of Louvain, I think because of their experience of fleeing the country and seeing the difficulties with their families, seeing kind of how things have transpired, recognize that, no, this is my home, and I'm going to give back. And the more that I give back, the more I really receive in terms of my faith.
Yeah.
But it's an impressive production. I mean, I don't think most people realize, but the facility itself holds 2,400 people.
It's a big building.
Yeah, it's massive. 2,400 people, 900 parking spots. At current right now, I think they have 7 masses and they're overflowing.
Wow.
The pastor is saying, we don't have enough parking spots anymore. And it's one of those things where, you know, when they're moving, they're like, yeah, the difficulty of the old location was there's no parking, the facility was not, there's not enough, blah, blah. And so this property came up and it was perfect because it had classrooms, it had the space for worship. The most important thing to the pastor was parking space. For all of us who have been at the cathedral, we know how difficult parking space, right?
It's very true.
And so this location now has 900 spots, which is triple the amount of the previous, and it's still not enough.
Oh, my goodness.
They're still bursting the seams, even this facility.
Yeah.
And Archbishop jokingly said, at this point, I don't know what to do. At this point, you might as well, you know, buy a complex somewhere and build an, you know, entire, you know, complex for yourself. It's impressive. I mean, I think they probably have over 4,000 or 5,000 families, but they have, I think, 6 to 8 masses a weekend and 2 daily masses.
Wow, that is just so inspiring to hear all of that, and to just know that our faith is so alive there. This morning, I'm speaking with Father Randy Huang. He's telling us all about the community that he grew up in, and that's Our Lady of Lavang and St. Andrew Dunlac. They are our Parish of the Week here at Mater Dei Radio. Father, let me ask you, I mean, you've been sharing so much about this incredible community and how vibrant and alive it is. I guess, were there things for you growing up that really impacted you and encouraged you in your faith life and maybe even in your vocation?
Yeah, I think amongst the Vietnamese community in particular, there's a great devotion to Mary, a very strong devotion to Mary, in particular to Our Lady of Lavang.
Mm-hmm.
And that really took root in my life. And if, for those of you who have heard my vocation story before, my vocation story really hinges on three women, my grandmother, my mom, and Mary.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And I would say that Mary was really the catalyst that brought me to recognizing the vocation that our Lord had already planned for me. But that seed was planted through the devotion of Mary at the parish. And I remember every single October and May, they would have May crownings. And it'd be this very elaborate celebration of crowning Mary, of dancing, of music, right? And it always captivated me in terms of the grandness of how they approached it.
Mm-hmm.
And that impacts a kid, right? You're like, oh, something very different
mm-hmm.
from what I usually experience, right? But with that and, you know, this continual push of my mother and my grandmother to pray to Mary and to, you know, to go to her when, you know, I'm experiencing difficulties or even joys really helped me. And that devotion is still very strong in the Vietnamese community. A lot of the Vietnamese hymns, you know, Catholic hymns, are always Marian, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're Christ-centric, but there's always a component of Mary being in there, being the catalyst of allowing the people to encounter her son. And so I would say that's a very large part of the Vietnamese community. Again, I think this is Catholic in general.
Right.
But my personal experience growing up in Lavang, a deep devotion to Our Lady of Lavang and her tender care for the people, especially as I spoke in this parish, you know, was established by refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And Our Lady was someone that they looked towards as kind of the evening star in their life that many, I would say, believe firmly that she was the one that brought them to the U.S.
Wow.
Safely, you know, through all the turmoils, through all the war-striking difficulties, the fleeing of a war-ridden country on boats, right, crossing the Pacific Ocean. And so, yeah, I would say that the devotion to Mary was something that was very much a part of my upbringing and for the culture of the Vietnamese parish.
Wow. That's beautiful, Father. And before we let you go, you know, you talked about those grand celebrations and that impact that that had on you. I wanted to ask you, this weekend, there's a big celebration happening at Our Lady of Lavang. Maybe you can just give mm-hmm. people an overview, because I don't think many people realize this huge event that's happening right here in Portland.
Yeah. Annually, since the establishment of Our Lady of Lavang in the late 70s, early 80s, came about of this desire to have kind of a gathering of all the Vietnamese people in our diocese. Kind of think again in context, right? When
sure.
the refugees came to Portland, they were kind of scattered. A lot of them lived in Portland, but there was a lot that were living in Salem, living in Beaverton, living in other parts of the metropolitan area.
Okay.
Right? And so the pastor wanted an opportunity to gather them all together to worship. And so he kind of utilized this opportunity to gather the people from the various, you know, communities to come together, to have a couple, you know, days of catechesis, of study, of worship, but to also ultimately give thanks to God for his gift of being able to give them the opportunity to worship freely in this country, right? And so it always coincided with 4th of July, the mark of independence of our country, but to also, you know, realize that it is through the hard work and labors of the forefathers of this country that has allowed the refugees of the U.S. able to worship freely. And so colloquially, it's called the Freedom Masses. The reason being that freedom is the kind of the central point in which gathers these people together, celebrating
okay.
the freedom that's been given to God. And it's called, you know, Freedom Masses because there are multiple masses,
mm-hmm.
right? The celebration is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And each of those days, you have conferences in English and Vietnamese for the youth, for the elderly. You have prayer sessions. You have confessions going all day. You have adoration. There's food that's cooked and sold. And then there's entertainment. There's concerts.
Wow.
That are held. And the celebration draws people mainly from the Vietnamese community in the archdiocese, but it also there's also people that come from Canada, from Seattle, from California, from Nevada, from other parts of the U.S. have this desire to come.
Wow.
So it's not just a local parish thing, but it's a national thing that people gather to, you know, and so we've drove the buses that come yearly from Canada, from Vancouver, BC, Seattle, you know, and other parts of California. But the Freedom Masses, as I said, you know, is a celebration of the ability to worship freely, which also signifies, too, not just the Vietnamese community. Yes, it's heavily, it was created by the Vietnamese community, and it's hosted at the Vietnamese parish.
Sure.
But there is a large demographic of people that have experienced the difficulties of fleeing their countries, coming to America to be able to freely worship.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this Mass will, especially on the Sunday, the Mass is on Friday and Saturday. It's usually by one of the visiting priests or the auxiliary bishop, Bishop Peter Smith. But then on Sunday, the Mass is concluded by Archbishop Sample.
Right? Okay.
And at that Mass, there are people from the Polish community, from the Laos community, from the Min community, from the Filipino community, so from various communities in the archdiocese that come together, right? Because again, the purpose is not simply for the Vietnamese to gather, but
sure,
it's for all the refugees of the archdiocese to gather together, you know, to offer worship and thanksgiving to God for the opportunity to freely worship in this country. So I'd recommend for anybody who's out there, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You know,
yeah,
if you are ever in the area, stop on by. I mean, they go all out. I mean, they've been preparing for these days a year in advance.
Wow.
This year is the 50th anniversary of the first refugees in the United States. So the first ones were in 1975. So this marks 50th year of that. But this is the 47th anniversary of this Mass.
Wow.
So this Mass has been celebrated for 47 years now. And the first weekend of July, every single year, you know, and it's grown over and over the years. And yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing when you go there, because my mom is part of the crew. But there are literally over 100 people that have been working and prepping for the meals that are going to be sold these 3 days.
Oh my goodness. That's just for the meals.
Yep, just for the meals. 100 plus volunteers, and they all have various roles of different dishes.
Sure.
That do that. And you have a security team of like 100 people to manage security. And you have all these people who have been setting up, building the altar, building various things to accommodate guests, building facilities to bathrooms and whatnot for guests that are going to be coming. So that's a massive event.
Because you were telling me that the Sunday Mass, that's in the parking lot because it's so big. How many people come for that Sunday Mass usually?
It really depends, but we're definitely in the thousands. You know, I think 1 year when they were celebrating the 30th anniversary, they had up to 10,000 people.
That's incredible. Right? Oh, my goodness.
And so people think Corpus Christi was big. Oh, well, I don't think you'd really love that. You know, 3,000 is a national occurrence on the weekend.
You weren't too fazed by that Corpus Christi
crowd. I wasn't fazed. And that's why I brought the security team from Arles-Laval, because they're used to it.
To Corpus Christi.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
A bulk of the security was Arles-Laval.
Oh, wow.
Arles-Laval has a security team. They have a security team of, I think, 60 people.
Okay.
That assist in parking, in safety, and whatnot. And so I brought them on because they're used to procession. Vietnamese people love processions. I mean, if there's any time to parade around with statues and Our Lord, they're going to do it.
I love it.
Right? And so they know it very well. And so I was like, you know what? Instead of hiring people, I'm just going to ask them to come and help out. You know. And so they were very generous in offering that support for us of making sure people were safe, making sure people were, you know, going the right direction and not getting lost.
Sure.
But yeah, the security crew is going to be helping this event. And I'd encourage anybody to really come and see it, to be able to come and worship with the community. Because I think what people realize is that the church is more than just me, my family, and my parish community.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, Corpus Christi was a piece of that, seeing the universality of the church, even just on a local size.
Mm-hmm.
But to be coming to this Freedom Mass, to see the people and to see, you know, what has brought them together. My hope, right, I think everyone's hope, is that it stirs up this renewal in all of us, right, of committing to our faith. You know, the Archbishop has spoken at length now on this desire for mission renewal in this archdiocese. You know, we talk about how there's a lot of difficulties in parishes, but when you come to a parish like this and you see something like this, you see that the vibrancy of the church is still very much there.
Right.
And our Lord is working, right? And he's working especially amongst our ethnic communities, in local archdiocese, amongst the Hispanic community, the Vietnamese community, you know, the Swahili community. The beauty of it is there. And I think if we seek it out and we see it, and we see what our Lord is doing, it's going to inspire in us, all of us, right? This desire to bring that back to our parishes, be able to witness that is something that we all need to.
I agree, Father. That's, yeah, seeing the vibrancy and seeing the different parishes we have, the different communities we have, but that we all are united. And I definitely encourage anyone that can, like you said, to go to the Freedom Mass this weekend. And man, I would love to attend sometime because this seems like just an amazing experience.
Absolutely. And I think before I go off, I should probably give people kind of time for this weekend.
Sure.
Because we're talking about it, not really giving concrete times. And so I say for any of those who want to really experience this Freedom Mass this coming Sunday, at 8 a.m. is going to be the commemoration of all those who have fallen in the war. All those who have fallen have died trying to flee their various countries. So there will be a ceremony at 8 a.m. at Our Lady Louvain. And then followed by that, there will be a crowning of Mary and then procession. And then from there, 9:30 a.m., we'll have the final crowning of Mary and then Mass with the Archbishop. So I encourage people, that if they want to come early. And there's plenty of parking, but there's going to be a large crowd. And so I encourage people, if you're wanting to come around 8 a.m. 9:30 is when the crowning of Mary is going to happen, followed by Mass with the Archbishop.
Thank you. That's good information to have. And also, we have this event on our community calendar at Matra Day Radio. So if you need any of the details, you can also go there and you can attend this weekend. So once again, we're just so excited to be featuring Our Lady of Louvain and St. Andrew Dunlac this week. And we're just so grateful for everything that their parishioners bring to our whole community. And Father Randy, thank you so much for joining us today, for sharing about this amazing community that you grew up in. And we really thank you for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Sarah, for the opportunity.